This is the Berkeley Signal.
The world is collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio. I can't hear it. When I got to the house and I called you out, I could tell she had been crying. That same song on the radio makes me sad. I meant to turn it off, to say goodbye, to leave in quiet radio song. Hey, hey, hey. That same song, the DJ sucks, makes me sad. I tried to turn it off, to say goodbye, my love, that radio song. Hey, hey.
Elevation, Mindful Being, Resistors, Aztlan Warriors. Those are the names of some of the accounts removed from Facebook and Instagram Tuesday, after Facebook uncovered a plot to covertly influence the midterm elections. The tech giant said it uncovered 32 fake accounts and Facebook pages that were involved in what it described as coordinated, inauthentic behavior. The accounts had a total of 290,000 followers that created 30 events since April of 2017. One of the accounts had created a Facebook event to promote the protest against the upcoming Unite the Right rally in Washington, D.C. Protest organizers say the fake account is not behind the event. Facebook says it does not have enough technical evidence to state who was behind the fake pages, but said the accounts engaged in some similar activity to pages tied to Russia Russia before the 2016 election. Facebook's announcement comes just days after the company suffered the biggest loss in stock market history, losing about $119 billion. That's right, billion dollars in a single day.
Facebook has been at the center of a number of controversies in the United States and abroad. Earlier this year, Facebook removed more than 270 accounts it determined to be created by the Russian-controlled Internet Research Agency. Facebook made that move in early April, just days before founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg was questioned on Capitol Hill about how the voter profiling company Cambridge Analytica harvested data from more than 87 million Facebook users without their permission in efforts to sway voters to support Trump. Zuckerberg repeatedly apologized for his company's actions then. Today, we spend the hour with a leading critic of Facebook, Siva Vaidyanathan, author of Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. Let's begin with this latest news. There are hearings today that the Senate Intelligence Committee is holding. And yesterday, Facebook removed these bunch of pages saying they don't know if it's Russian trolls, but they think they are inauthentic. Talk about these pages, what they mean, what research is being done, and your concerns.
Facebook was unconcerned for nearly a decade that various groups, either state-sponsored or sponsored by some troublemaking groups, were popping up around Facebook, not just in the United States, not just in reference to one election or another, but around the world in a concerted effort or in some ways a distributed effort to undermine democracy and civil society. This has been going on almost as long as Facebook's allowed pages to pop up, right? Interest group pages to pop up. And Facebook got caught off guard, bizarrely, after the 2016 election, even though there were people within Facebook who were raising the alarm, right? That there were these pages, these accounts that were distributing nonsense, that were posing as Black Lives Matter pages. There were others that were posing as Texas independence pages. There were some supporting radical right positions and others supporting radical left positions. They were planning events. So all of this came out after the 2016 election. It should have come out before. And Facebook's been scrambling ever since. So what we've seen since the 2016 election in the United States is every time there is a major election around the world, Facebook will put all hands on that election and try to make sure that it can claim that it is cleaning up its act in preparation for that election. So we saw that in 2017 with the elections in Germany and in the Netherlands and in France. We saw that with the referendum on abortion that was held in Ireland earlier this year. In all of these cases, Facebook has made sure to crow about all that it has done to clean up the pollution that might distract people or disrupt the political process, the democratic process. But, you know, it hasn't done much in other places in the country. It did almost nothing in Mexico before its election. It has so far come up with no strategy for dealing with the much larger mess in India, the world's largest democracy. Facebook was instrumental in the election of Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines in 2006. It was instrumental in the Brexit referendum in 2016. In all of these cases, forces often from other countries, interfered in the democratic process, distributed propaganda, distributed misinformation, created chaos, often funneled campaign support outside of normal channels. And it's largely because Facebook is so easy to hijack. What we see just this week as Facebook makes these announcements is that they've managed to identify a handful of sites that, a few hundred thousand people have interacted with. We don't know if this is 5%, 10%, 50%, or 100% of the disruptive element going on before our off-year elections coming up in November.
Professor, one of the points that you make in your book is that so much attention has been focused on the work of Cambridge Analytica, but you believe that there's a much deeper structural problem with Facebook than just one company being able to access personal data and then use it for nefarious political ends. Could you talk about the structural issues that you see? And also, you mentioned the Philippines. Most people have not heard much about how Duterte was helped to win his election by Facebook. If you could give an example of how structurally it might have worked in the Philippines.
Look, Cambridge Analytica was a great story, right? It finally brought to public attention the fact that for more than 5 years, Facebook had encouraged application developers to get maximal access to Facebook data, to personal data and activity, not just from the people who volunteered to be watched by these app developers, but all of their friends, right? Which nobody really understood except Facebook itself and the application developers. So thousands of application developers got almost full access to millions of Facebook users for 5 years. This was basic Facebook policy. This line was lost in the storm over Cambridge Analytica. So Cambridge Analytica is run by Bond villains, right? They look evil. They work for evil people like Kenyatta in Kenya. You know, Steve Bannon helped run the company for a while. It's paid for by Robert Mercer, one of the more evil hedge fund managers in the United States. It had worked for Ted Cruz's campaign and then for the Brexit campaign and also for Donald Trump's campaign in 2016. So it's really easy to look at Cambridge Analytica and think of it as this dramatic story, this one-off. But the fact is, Cambridge Analytica is kind of a joke. It didn't actually accomplish anything. It pushed this weird psychometric model for voter behavior prediction, which no one believes works. And the fact is, the Trump campaign, the Cruz campaign, and before that, the Duterte campaign in the Philippines, the Modi campaign in India, they all used Facebook itself to target voters, either to persuade them to vote or dissuade them from voting. This was the basic campaign because the Facebook advertising platform allows you to target people quite precisely in groups as small as 20. You can base it on ethnicity and on gender, on interest, on education level, on zip code or other location markers. You can base it on people who are interested in certain hobbies, who read certain kinds of books, who have certain professional backgrounds. You can slice and dice an audience so precisely. It's the reason that Facebook makes as much money as it does, because if you're selling shoes, you would be a fool not to buy an ad on Facebook, right? And that's drawing all of this money away from commercially based media and journalism. At the same time, it's enriching Facebook, but political actors have figured out how to use this quite deftly. So when Modi ran in 2014, when Duterte ran in 2016, in both cases, Facebook had staff helping them work their system more effectively. Facebook also boasted about the fact that both Modi and Duterte were Facebook savvy, right? The most connected candidates ever. In fact, Narendra Modi has more Facebook friends and followers than any other political figure in the world. He is the master of Facebook. It's not a coincidence that Narendra Modi and Rodrigo Duterte are dangerous nationalist leaders who have either advocated directly for violence against people, their own people, or have sat back and folded their arms as pogroms happened against Muslims.
Professor, could you talk about the impact that Modi has had on the internet? He has what? 43 million Facebook followers?
Right. And that doesn't include WhatsApp, right? WhatsApp is the most popular messaging service in India. It's also owned by Facebook, right? And it's tremendously important, not just in personal communication, but in harnessing mobs for mob violence, mostly against Muslims, but often against Christians and often against Hindus who happen to marry or date Muslims. This sort of vigilante mob violence is breaking out all over India. It's breaking out in Sri Lanka. We've seen the Rohingya massacre and expulsion in Myanmar, in Burma, often fueled, in fact, directly fueled by propaganda spread on Facebook and WhatsApp. And Modi has taken full advantage of this, right? He and his people mastered this technique early on. It's a three-part strategy, which I call the authoritarian playbook. What they do is they use Facebook and WhatsApp to distribute propaganda about themselves, flooding out all other discussion about what's going on in politics and government. Secondly, they use the same sort of propaganda machines, very accurately targeted, to undermine their opponents and critics publicly. And then thirdly, they use WhatsApp and Facebook to generate harassment, the sort of harassment that can put any non-government organization, human rights organization, journalist, scholar, or political party off its game, because you're constantly being accused of pedophilia, you're being accused of rape, or you're being threatened with rape, threatened with kidnapping, threatened with murder, which makes it impossible to actually perform publicly in a democratic space. This is exactly what Modi mastered in his campaign in 2014, and in fact, a bit before. before. And that same playbook was picked up by Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines. And it's being used all over the world by authoritarian and nationalist leaders to greater or lesser degrees. So in the United States, when Trump's campaign used Facebook almost as effectively to precisely target certain voters in certain states, like Michigan, like Wisconsin, like Pennsylvania, like Florida, and either turn them off from voting or turn them on to voting for Donald Trump when they might not have been otherwise motivated, by choosing very targeted specific issues, to either turn people on or off from voting. That was a sort of soft, light version of Narendra's authoritarian playbook. We did not see, and we've not seen yet, and hopefully we will not see, the same level of coordinated harassment from the Republican Party. At least we haven't seen it yet. So what we are seeing, of course, in a distributed way, anybody who, especially women who are involved in the public sphere, are constantly being assaulted with these messages of all sorts of threats, both publicly and privately. So, the culture of our democracy and the cultures of democracies around the world are directly threatened by these practices that are not only enabled by Facebook, they're actually accelerated by Facebook.
So this goes to a very important issue, Professor, that you now have Facebook, this corporation, deciding what we see and what we don't see. It's almost as if they run the telephone company and they're listening to what we say and deciding what to edit, even if some of the stuff is absolutely heinous that people are talking to each other about. The idea of this multinational corporation becoming the publisher and seen as that and determining what gets out. So, yes, there's a protest against Unite the Right. That is very real. They've taken down one page that might not have been real organizing the protest against Unite the Right. And the Unite the Right rally is supposed to be happening. What, for example, would happen if there was a protest against Facebook? Siva.
Yeah, you can't use Facebook to protest against Facebook, by the way. You can't even use Facebook to advertise a book about Facebook. They will not allow a group or a page or an advertisement to contain the word Facebook. And it's not just to insulate themselves from criticism. That is a nice bonus for them. But it's really because they don't want any sort of implication that the company itself is endorsing any group or page or product. So the use of the word, the only way Facebook operates is algorithmically, right? It has machines make very blunt decisions. So the very presence of the word Facebook will knock a group down or knock a page down. And so you can't use Facebook to criticize Facebook.
So what about your book, which has the word Facebook in it?
Right. I can't buy ads on Facebook about it. But that's okay. I think I'll do okay. Thinking about this notion of the extent to which Facebook governs our structures, our sense of awareness, our public sphere, right? So Facebook is a place where a source from which more than half of Americans regularly get news. That should be of some concern because, as you said, Facebook's algorithms decide what we see and what we don't see. And the algorithms reflect what we have already told Facebook we care about. So if we have engaged with the Democracy Now! Page for many years in lots of ways and put comments under items on that page, there's a very good chance that a lot of Democracy Now! Content will show up in a news feed. If you deal with Breitbart just as effectively or just as often, you're going to get a lot of Breitbart content and a lot less Democracy Now! Content. From Facebook's point of view, it makes sense, right? They want to give you more of what you want. They want to keep you hooked on Facebook. They want to amplify their effect on your life. And they're constantly trying to convince you that you'll feel a little bit better if you engage with Facebook. And being reinforced in your beliefs is a lovely feeling, right? So what happens there is your field of vision narrows over time. And the same thing happens with Google, the more you interact with that. This has a number of effects, but it definitely makes us less able to interact with those who differ from us in a humane way, in a respectful way. It's not the only contributor to this phenomenon, but it certainly doesn't help. And the more that we perform our politics and the more we try to learn about the world through Facebook, the more we are denying ourselves a broad lens, a broad vision. And that's a shame. But in addition, Facebook has the ability to get hijacked because what it promotes mostly are items that generate strong emotion. What generates strong emotions? Well, content that is cute or lovely, like puppies and baby goats, but also content that is extreme, content that is angry, content that is hateful, content that feeds conspiracy theories. And this hateful, angry conspiracy theory collection doesn't just spread because people like it. In fact, it more often than not spreads because people have problems with it. If I were to post some wacky conspiracy theory on my Facebook page today, 9 out of 10 of the comments that would follow it would be friends of mine arguing against me, telling me how stupid I was for posting this. The very act of commenting on that post amplifies its reach, puts it on more people's news feeds, makes it last longer, sit higher. Right? So the very act of arguing against the crazy amplifies the crazy. Right? It's one of the reasons that Facebook is a terrible place to deliberate about the world. It's a really effective place if you want to motivate people toward all sorts of ends, like getting out to a rally. But it's terrible if you actually want to think and discuss and deliberate about the problems in the world. And what the world needs now, more than anything, are more opportunities to deliberate calmly and effectively with real information. And Facebook is working completely against that goal.
I wanted to ask you about the political economy underlying not social media per se, because, I mean, I think your book is the most important nonfiction book of this year, if not of the last decade, because so many people use Facebook. 2.2 billion people around the world now use it. So it's extremely important for the users, especially, to look at the mechanics of this monster that's been created over the last decade or so. But one of the things that it seemed to me, to some degree, you didn't address is the issue of the political economy underlying all of this social media. I think, for instance, of Julian Assange's book, Cypherpunks, where he talks about the dangers of the internet. And he also goes into this issue of the difference between the platonic view of how the internet and social media works and the actual physical underpinnings, the cable systems, the satellites, the physical structures that make this social media possible, and how governments and corporations have, in effect, hijacked this privatization of the internet, of this communications medium. I'm wondering if you could address how government policy made the development of a Google or a Facebook possible.
Look, back in the late 1990s, we were sold a vision, a dream of an internet that was a separate phenomenon from our real world. We called it cyberspace. We used spatial metaphors for it. We had people like John Perry Barlow rhapsodizing about the fact that rules don't apply and this space will be exempt from both the prejudices of regular human beings and the limitations of the state that the state puts on us. That never really existed. It was always a dream. The internet was commercialized and structured almost immediately, not extremely at the beginning. And if you remember, in the early part of the 21st century, we did have this proliferation of voices, largely through blogs, that was the dominant form of expression for amateurs, for voices yet to be heard, for emerging voices, for minority voices, to generate audience and put their message out. And it also meant that in those rather innocent days, you could discover new voices from other voices, right, through links and recommendations. But nothing was structured by algorithms, and nothing was fueled by advertising, at least not effectively, right? In those days, web advertising didn't make anybody any money. Well, Google changed that, and quickly after that, Facebook changed that, right? So by around 2002, Google figured out how to target ads quite effectively based on the search terms that you had used. By about 2007, Facebook was starting to build ads into its platform as well. And because it had so much more rich information on our interests and our connections and our habits, and even once we put Facebook on our mobile phones, our location, right? It could trace us to whatever store we went into, whatever church or synagogue or mosque we went into. It could know everything about us. At that point, targeting ads became incredibly efficient and effective. That's what drove the massive revenues for both Facebook and Google. That's why Facebook and Google have all the advertising money these days, right? It's why the traditional public sphere is so impoverished, why it's so hard to pay reporters a living wage these days, because Facebook and Google is taking all that money, because they developed something better than the display ad of a newspaper or magazine, frankly. But there was just no holding back on that.
Their ability to monetize our use also, doesn't it depend on government's refusal to defend privacy rights, policy decisions that our leaders make,
absolutely,
that people's privacy rights no longer matter?
Absolutely. Now, that varies across the globe, of course. In Europe, there are much stronger data protection laws. There always have been, but as of May 2018, they're much better codified and clearer. And so Facebook and Google have a harder time targeting people effectively in Europe than they do in the rest of the world, especially in North America. We have no real protections of our data. We have no rights to our own data in the United States, effectively. We are merely rats in a cage or cows in a pasture to Facebook and Google in the United States and in Canada and Australia and South Africa and Brazil and India and most of the world. It really, Europe is the exception in this case, and fairly soon the UK won't even be part of that exception. So it's a really sad state of affairs. Many of us for more than a decade have been calling for strong data protection so that we would be informed as to what our data is being used for, who gets our data, and we would be informed and asked for explicit permission every time a company shares our data or gives our data or sells our data to another party. It's been impossible to get those legislative proposals through legislatures, largely because the lobbies against data protection go beyond Facebook and Google. They include Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile. They include Comcast, right? Some of the most powerful companies in the world are wedded to this massive surveillance capitalism model that has enriched Facebook and Google. They see, right, Comcast sees its only hope to be in the advertising business, to compete against Facebook and Google, to do exactly what Facebook and Google have been doing. So Comcast very much wants to know as much about you as Facebook does. It's not there yet, but it hopes to get there. So that's one of the reasons we're up against formidable political foes when we try to argue for basic human dignity and the ability for people to have some say over how they're being used and abused.
If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. Instead of spending billions on the war, I can use that money so I can feed the poor, 'cause I know some so poor. When it rains, that's when they shower, scream and fight the power. That's when the vulture devours. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. I know some soldiers that sleep but they can't dream, wake up with screams, sounds of M16. So take this medal of honor for your bravery. I wish you the best, kid. You and your family. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president.
When the radio won't play there, they call it rebel music. How can you refuse it? Children of Moses, tell the children the truth, the truth. It's not all that bling that's diamond. Tell them the truth, the truth. Most of y'all wear cubic zirconians. Tell them the truth, the truth, yeah. Your soul is worth more than diamonds and gold. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, if I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, if I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, I feel
feel the rain coming. Let me play my guitar for him right now.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
From Berkeley, it's TwitWit Radio. Social media on the air.
Free speech radio.
Responsible anarchy.
Radio. I'm Berkeley Kid. Are we ready?
Ready.
Let's go, dude.
I am ready. Here. A point of information.
Smart Alex has a question.
We don't have a quorum.
Are we short?
I saw somebody in the lobby.
We make quorum or this meeting is over.
Next.
I'm here for the audition.
Do you have a resume?
If you give me the part, I will tell you everything I know.
Take a seat.
We have a quorum.
Before we begin, are there any announcements?
In honor of People's Park 49th birthday, the University of California plans to bulldoze the park and build student dormitories. Treason!
Has the floor.
People's Park is a great property. Baron and I have a preemptive offer on the table.
If the offer is accepted, we begin construction immediately.
To construct what?
A family-friendly dissident theme park. People's Park land, where dissent is history.
That was 50 years ago.
No, the People's Park riots were 49 years ago.
After 50 years, People's Park becomes a registered National Historic Landmark.
We are talking with Virtual Baron and Ivanka about the university's plan to bulldoze People's Park. Kellyanne has her hand up.
After 50 years, the property becomes a registered historic landmark and future development is impossible. So act fast. We are already cutting it close. This is the 49th year since the founding of the park. My polling shows that forced evictions in front of the cameras will outrage the public like kicking a beehive. So let's do it.
This is a land grab. It's not about the homeless.
The Environmental Protection Agency and the president want to honor the history of dissent with a family-friendly museum and theme park with daily events. Visitors can operate a bulldozer or throw tear gas grenades into the tents.
What do we do with the little people?
Let them eat hope.
As I see it, the great hope implicit in the People's Park is that in our leisure time, so to speak, we will make the social revolution.
The spirit which built the People's Park is stronger than gas and clubs.
It seemed to me quite extraordinary that in a situation such as this, there would be the kind of police power masked because some people built themselves a park out of a vacant area.
A glimpse of the possibilities of a united community. All kinds of people overcoming all kinds of differences, doing enjoyable work that was also a matter of struggle. Kind of confrontation that also made you feel good, that opened up possibilities, that set examples, that was very real.
We'll be right back.
Hayden and Mario Savio speaking at People's Park before PsychMeds lobotomized everyone.
I'm not lobotomized. I'm comfortably numb.
Siri, define dissident.
Dissident. Individuals diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder acting as submissive followers and useful idiots.
But that was before the intervention. I'm not paranoid anymore. I'm better now.
Congratulations.
Stop gaslighting me.
Dude, it can take weeks to feel anything when switching regimes.
Caller on line one.
Go ahead, caller.
It's pretty bad how we've been duped. I've been duped. You've been duped. If you're on any SSRI or any drug for mental health, you have been duped. It's called the anatomy of an epidemic, Prozac. Incredibly dangerous. Be your own doctor.
And now, back to our story.
I don't know anything about it, so let me explain. At the People's Park Dissident Theme Park, future generations of Instagramps enjoy a 3D virtual descent experience.
It will feel like you're reliving something so you don't lose it.
Descent is history, dude.
What makes you so smart?
I have a 148 IQ, dude. I'm really smart.
Well, then, can you help me with this?
Ask me anything.
What the hell is Instagramp?
Trade secrets are off limits.
There is a difference between trade secrets and trading secrets. All the bloodline families do it.
Okay, then, let's trade secrets. I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
Can I go home?
In the middle of an audition?
Is there a part for me?
Go to the top of page 6 where it says, I'm not an actor.
I'm not an actor.
That was awful. Next.
I would kill to play George Orwell.
That was terrible. You're hired.
Do I get the part?
You can play the show host. I'm going to college.
I'll try. We're talking with... Who are you?
I play Melania's stunt double. Ivanka does all her own stunts.
Melania enters stage left.
When I was a little girl in communist Slovenia, my father forbid me to read George Orwell, but I was a disobedient party girl, and secretly I hated the party. But one day, in Cold War, KGB friend of my father recruited me to infiltrate the human trafficking community where I met Baron's father.
Why are you admitting this now?
Because you put truth serum in my tea. I never loved your father, Baron.
He's my father, too.
Yes, Ivanka, but not by me.
Oh, Melania, please. Everyone knows.
It was a difficult birth.
I need to know. Who is my real father?
Baron, your genes are from an ancient bloodline family.
Modified genes.
Well, all genes are modified one way or another.
Yeah. Caller on line 2.
Do you have a question or comment?
Jesus and Muhammad walk into a bar.
Okay. Is that a question or a comment?
Jesus and Muhammad walk into a bar.
The premise for a joke?
I want to play Jesus.
What is your point?
Does Jesus do all his own stunts?
Muhammad, too.
Oh, I was completely fooled. I thought you were the real Baron.
I'm as real as Melania and Ivanka, dude.
Ivanka is more fake than me.
I am more lifelike.
Fake jewelry is artificial, Ivanka, no matter how much lipstick you try to put on it.
What's the difference between fake and artificial?
For 600 points, give a misleading answer to this question. What is the difference between fake and artificial?
Oh, I should know this.
The artificial what?
Repeat the question.
Fake versus artificial. What's the difference?
Fake
is fiction, artificial is art.
Wrong.
Why learn from history when I can just wait for it to be repeated again for free?
Wrong.
Jesus and Muhammad walk into a bar. Already gone too far. Says, what is this place? Or Satan makes a kissy face. I've already gone too far. John the Baptist shooting pools. Boy, you better play it cool. I say, man, it's just a stupid song.
Music is by Ira Marlowe. The program is Twitwit Radio. And now, back to our story.
If I were a clone of someone, wouldn't I know about it?
Artificial intelligence can simulate that reality too, dude.
Ivanka, I loved the white dress you wore in Jerusalem, but not the bulletproof heels.
And yet, I am more popular than you.
Kim Jong-un loves me.
North Korea is a great property.
Baron, I have a tweet here that says the entire First Family are synthetic clones programmed to follow orders.
Whose orders?
I can't say.
Yes, you can. I spiked your tea with truth serum.
I'm Baron's stunt double.
Who developed your operating software?
George Soros.
I have a major league crush on George Soros.
What is so great about George Soros?
He has no soul.
We may now think that everything is fine, but the fact is that the system is broken. They were hanging speculators from lampposts. I am basically there to make money. I cannot and do not look at the social consequences of what I do. But it's a tremendous sense of responsibility, actually. And it's also a humbling experience because I am actually trying to do the right thing. And sometimes what I do has an unintended negative consequence. As a competitor, I've got to compete to win. As a human being, I am concerned about the society in which I live. It's one person. It's one person who at one time engages in amoral activities and at the rest of the time tries to be moral. I don't feel guilty because I'm engaged in an amoral activity which is not meant to have anything to do with guilt. Because we find it more convenient to operate without it. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
This is George Soros. This program is Twitwit Radio, fake opposition politics, and the suppression of dissent on university campuses.
I love you, Mother. Can I massage your feet?
Not on the radio.
Nobody can see your feet on the radio.
Stop it, Baron. No, please, stop, Baron.
All of the bloodline families do it.
Baron is so lifelike.
What does that mean?
DNA gene enhancement is hot right now.
It is a great deal for America.
What is so damn great about being an enslaved clone?
I have superior genes, dude.
Baron has soft and creamy bulletproof skin.
Online, too.
Go ahead.
You and your rapacious developer friends who make secret deals with the university then break their promises with the people. You touch just one sacred blade of People's Park grass and we're going to have homeless youth and street people from all over the world marching on 4th Street and turn into the biggest free box you ever saw. It's just sickens me to see how many people on this council are the same kind of people that side with Franco, Pinochet, and Eddie Bauer. I want 24-hour police surveillance on that side of the council.
The voice is Stony Burke. I'm Berkeley Kidd. This is Twit Wit Radio. Half true, more or less 100% of the time. We have been talking about medicating dissent.
Donald is a moron. I want a divorce.
Oh, my God. How did you make her say that?
I hacked into the White House teleprompter, dude.
Oh, cool.
Rebellion is not revolution, dude.
I have nothing to lose but my prescriptions.
Dissent is a mental illness.
When properly nurtured, dissent can metastasize into a chemically induced second opinion.
Soloft makes my hands shake.
Soloft made me dangerously calm, fighting the pigs on the emergency staircase.
Dissent is not a mental health disorder.
People's Park protests. The anti-war movement. All that happened before psych meds were invented to make me chill.
Apathy kills, dude.
The bulldozers are ready to begin tearing up the park.
What can we do about it?
Siri?
Be it resolved that the KPFA local station board urges Berkeley City officials to seek historical landmark status for People's Park before the mayor cuts a deal with the university to commit treason.
People's Park cannot become a historic landmark until after 50 years.
That's months from now.
What's the holdup?
The mayor is wavering. He wants to renegotiate.
Are his hands shaking?
Of course his hands are shaking. He's a liberal.
Mayor Aragon, do you wish to cast a vote?
Yes.
Yes. The vote has 6 yes votes. The motion passes. The city council meeting is adjourned.
Charlie 26, I'm in the neighborhood responding.
I think it's over!
Students at the University of California are reinventing the whole notion of how to win a strike against the Board of Regents with advice from astronauts on the International Space Station.
We have had some time off today to watch video of the student strike at UC Berkeley.
All of us here in the space station applaud your strike, and we expect your movement to grow into a global revolution against capitalism and the oppression of wage slavery.
How many people were inside?
Okay.
If you touch one blade of sacred People's Park grass, there will be...
I want student dorms with casino gambling. I want world peace and prescription drugs.
People's Park is a historic site. Student dissenters were killed there. The Occupy movement began at People's Park in Berkeley long before Occupy even had a name.
Caller on line one.
A countercultural theme park were to go through and happen in Berkeley, there would be a special Telegraph Avenue fun ride every evening at sundown, right at Sproul Plaza. They would be able to surround a police car, overturn it, and torch it.
The only way I would vote for something like this, if you're going to make Telegraph Avenue this cultural neuter, is if Disney
recognized and acknowledged the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender characters in cartoons. A film like Lion Queen.
You know, she got a point. I mean, really, what about the jobs? Who's gonna get the jobs, you know, if Disney comes in here and has this counterculture theme park? I'm just saying, who's gonna be hired to play the parts of like Angela Davis or Huey Newton or Bobby Seale or Eldridge Cleaver? They all march down Telegraph Avenue on their way to Oakland. They have to be represented. Who is going to be hired to play these people?
I would advise them to hire the colorful street people who live on the avenue today to play the roles of the colorful street people. And of course, we'd need a very forceful black woman to play Angela Davis.
Oh, okay, I can see that. So what the man is saying is that we can help change these cracker theme park developers by before they come and rewrite the history of Berkeley. And we can do that by infiltrating their corporate culture from the inside. Okay, here you gotta see what I'm saying. We get the jobs, and then we re-educate them about the social justice thing. I can get behind that. Now, how much would I get paid if I played Angela Davis? And I do have a resume.
Thank you. Councilperson Spoon?
Don't let these guys buy you out, making Berkeley's socialist and humanitarian legacy trivial. Improved working conditions will not get any better unless we synchronize our watches and get behind the times. We must strive to stamp out creeping excellence in overserved neighborhoods and roll back the corporate colonization of the unconscious.
I'm sure that many local actors of color would be hired at minimum wage.
Mr. Madam Mayor, esteemed council members, the checks from the city have stopped coming. Sending us into receivership and endangering the icon, what? Head of Timothy Leary.
You had the frozen head of Timothy Leary?
Yes, Madam Mayor.
And it, because we stopped payment, it unfroze?
Well, it hasn't unfroze yet, but it's okay. Close.
It's close.
And the city of Berkeley is supposed to pay for this? I mean, are we a repository for...
Have you checked with Ben and Jerry for space?
I think they already have Cherry Garcia and Wavy Gravy.
Could we save some money here, put a wig on, and use it for the Patty Hearst statue?
We could look into that. That's,
I second that.
That sounds like a good idea.
Since we're not going to put any money into this, maybe
just state your name and your district, please.
Good evening. I am Dr. Skank from the Lawrence Berkeley Lab and Radiation Facility up next to the Children's Museum up on the hill. Yeah. We demand an apology from the city council for demanding the closure of our radiation facility. Not only are you standing in the way of science, but you're besmirching our reputation. Now, it is unfortunate that the Children's Museum is right in the cloud from the radiation facility. There's absolutely no danger to the public, and if there are any mutations, it's just adding to the biodiversity. Now, let me explain that we take the radioactive isotope as a tracer on the drugs, and we put it in the animal. We get lots of money for this.
You just want an apology.
You just want an apology for us, for the people of Berkeley kind of questioning your very presence in the... In a very densely populated urban area?
If that's not too much to ask for.
Should we apologize to this guy?
No.
Get lost. Democ City Council with Ed Holmes, Chris Welch, Kurt Reinhart, Diane Amos, Betty Halpern, James King, Karen Ripley, Selma Spector, Chet Gardner, Stony Burke, Carol Denny, Hallie Hammer, and special guest, Dr.
Skank, Mark McDonald.
Ladies and gentlemen, your mock city council for the city of Berkeley.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
We'll be right back.
Wheeler, the new head of the Environmental Protection Agency, disclosed his lobbying ties to the fossil fuel industry this week, raising alarm bells about whether he would be any better than his predecessor, Scott Pruitt, who recently resigned in disgrace. Wheeler is known as a longtime energy lobbyist and served under Pruitt as deputy EPA chief. As investigations into Pruitt's deeds continue, environmental groups are now demanding that the policies he put into place at the EPA be put on hold until the inquiries are complete. Joining me to discuss both Wheeler and Pruitt is Lucas Ross, senior policy analyst with the group Friends of the Earth. Welcome to the program, Lucas.
It's great to be here.
So I understand you've just returned from a hearing where Mr. Wheeler was testifying to members of Congress about his ties. People who are appointed to such to head such government agencies are expected to disclose information about potential conflicts of interest with any industries that they might be regulating. So what did you find out? What did Andrew Wheeler let on that he's connected with?
You know, watching the hearing this morning, I was struck by the fact that he really is a very dangerous man to be in charge of the EPA. And I think before anyone jumps to any conclusions about him being any kind of improvement over Scott Pruitt, three things need to be made absolutely clear. The first thing is that to your question about industries, he spent most of the last 10 years of his life representing the fossil fuel sector. In fact, his biggest client in private practice was a coal company, Murray Energy, with very close ties to the Trump administration. Second, before that, he worked for actually one of the senators he was testifying in front of, James Inhofe, the biggest climate denier in the Senate. This is the guy who notoriously brought a snowball onto the floor of the Senate to disprove global warming. He was Inhofe's guy for nearly two decades, and it shows in his climate denial. It shows in his management of the EPA. And I think thirdly, and this is probably the most important part, as he continues to advance this agenda on behalf of his former fossil fuel clients, he is a clone of Scott Pruitt on policy terms. Every piece of policy that Scott Pruitt got the ball rolling on, Andrew Wheeler is preparing to advance. And he said as much before Congress this morning. What he said was that he would waste no time continuing the deregulatory agenda and implementing the president's vision for what the EPA should, or I should say shouldn't, do.
Hmm. So he isn't new to the EPA. He worked under Pruitt. Why are we just now basically understanding what his links to these various lobbying groups, what his lobbying links to these various industries are? How was he even the deputy under Pruitt with such open links? Or is that just basically par for the course under the Trump administration? If Pruitt was going to be the head, why not have someone like Wheeler right below him, right?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the total takeover of the EPA by fossil fuel interests. And if Scott Pruitt was the guy who opened the door for the polluters that Andrew Wheeler spent his life protecting, then Andrew Wheeler is the guy who is keeping that door wide open. The thing that made Wheeler so controversial this week is that it came out recently that he had met with former clients while at the EPA. That's a big deal, and it's something that he's trying to hide and downplay. The other part is, and this hasn't been received nearly the attention it deserves, is that Andrew Wheeler has been meeting with former representatives of a group called NERO. That's the National Energy Resources Organization. This is a dark money fossil fuel group. Now, this wouldn't be as controversial as it really is had Andrew Wheeler himself not been in charge of it as recently as 3 years ago. So this is a front for the fossil fuel industry that is composed almost entirely of representatives of the fossil fuel industry that Andrew Wheeler used to be in charge of. And since he became acting administrator and during his time as deputy administrator, he was actually meeting with a lot of his former chums from this front group. It's really problematic, and he hasn't really answered the questions in a way that he should have, that should satisfy the public, that should satisfy the executive branch, frankly.
Now, he claimed this week that he began rolling back and sort of phasing out his lobbying efforts over the past year and a half, expecting to be called into work at the EPA and wanting to be sure that he wouldn't be accused of conflicts of interest. But you're saying that he still met with former clients while working at the EPA?
Yes, that is what has been reported. He's met with former clients, and he also met, and this hasn't, again, received the attention it deserves. He met with members of the National Energy Resources Organization, the fossil fuel group he used to run. It's a big problem, and just this week, he's begun to face his first official call for an investigation into his ethics. That's after only a month in office as acting administrator. There was this perception that's really not very well founded, that Andrew Wheeler was going to come in and be this vigorous and vicious advocate of polluters, but that unlike Scott Pruitt, he would have a slightly smarter head for avoiding these ethical quagmires. What we have seen over the last couple of days is that that just isn't really true. But the mainstream media isn't really holding him to account in the way that they should. They think that this is a Washington guy. He's going to do responsible Washington things in the process of gutting our environmental protections. And I make no mistake, that is a narrative that Andrew Wheeler has put out there. It is a narrative he is a beneficiary of. And it is a kind of protection of Washington insiderism
right. That
is deeply problematic on its own terms. A lot of conservatives, and unfortunately, I think a lot of liberals, get the idea because Andrew Wheeler is the sort of guy they would meet at a cocktail party, and absolutely he is, that somehow he's less awful than Scott Pruitt. That just isn't the case.
Right. USA Today put out a piece called Andrew Wheeler is No Scott Pruitt, Seven Things to Know About the Acting EPA Administrator. And in it, the piece basically says Wheeler will be more tactical than Pruitt and that he won't attract as much scandal as Pruitt did. And this is, of course, the danger. Unfortunately, Pruitt was forced to resign in part because he just blatantly used taxpayer funds to go on first-class trips and install that very expensive private phone booth in his office rather than the rolling back of protections, public protections, rather than essentially destroying the EPA from the inside. So Andrew Wheeler is only different from Pruitt in that he may not step into the same kinds of additional ethical scandals that Pruitt stepped into, but of course seems to be bent on continuing deregulatory policies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is an important point here because, as you just said, Andrew Wheeler is effectively picking up where Scott Pruitt left off. What do we really know about Scott Pruitt's corruption? Obviously, what was reported. But when he resigned, there were over 15 independent investigations into his conduct. The one that had already concluded definitively that he broke the law.
Hmm.
Now, if Andrew Wheeler is picking up right where Scott Pruitt left off, and those investigations are still ongoing, we honestly don't know how deep the corruption went. So every single piece of policy that Scott Pruitt touched while he was administrator is suspect right now because we don't know the level of illegal collusion with industry that he was actually practicing while he was in charge. And if Andrew Wheeler is just stepping into his place and continuing that as though nothing had happened, we need to find out how deep the problem went, how deep the rot went. This is an issue that is honestly very concerning because he's just continuing that work without those investigations being allowed to conclude.
So, Lucas, I understand that your organization, Friends of the Earth, joined about a dozen or so environmental groups in sending a letter to members of Congress saying that any of the policies that Scott Pruitt put into place that are still being put into place need to be suspended until the investigations are complete. Tell us a little bit about that letter and what support you have in Congress for it.
Yeah, so categorically, it is simply unconscionable to allow any piece of policy touched by Scott Pruitt as administrator to proceed until those investigations are complete. We have a right to know, and we deserve to know the full scope of his corruption. It's the only way that the EPA is ever going to recover its legitimacy. What we were demanding was a suspension of all of Scott Pruitt's policies while the independent investigations that have been initiated by the EPA's Inspector General into Pruitt's conduct conclude. This was in support of a piece of legislation introduced by Senator Merkley from Oregon and Representative Connolly from Virginia. What the legislation would do is it would suspend all of the initiated rulemakings put into motion by Scott Pruitt until after those investigations are complete. Mm-hmm. Now, this is really important because he actually got the ball rolling on a bunch of really damaging policies. Now, first of all, you've got an attempt to take clean water protection away from 117 million Americans. You've got the initiation of the peeling back of carbon limitations in the power sector. And you've also got a tax against clean vehicle standards that are designed to make our cars less dirty and more fuel efficient. Like, these are all major policy shifts that skew in favor of the very industries that Pruitt is accused of colluding with inappropriately.
And actually, I'm just wondering, Lucas, I want to just take an aside for a second. The Associated Press, we had reported on our news headlines on our show yesterday that Associated Press got a hold of some draft proposals for why the Trump administration, or the justification the Trump administration is coming up with to freeze fuel efficiency standards at the 2020 level that were put in place under Obama rather than, you know, have greater efficiency. And their reasoning was that if cars are more fuel efficient, more people will drive cars, and therefore more people will die in car accidents. I couldn't believe this.
It's absolutely Orwellian, the fact that they are arguing for the peeling back of public health standards in the name of protecting public health. The idea that it's going to actually save lives if we have fewer protections is frankly insane. They know it's insane. We know it's insane. And I think the minute that this proposal is put in front of a federal judge, they are going to declare it's insane. But the biggest problem that we have right now is that the judiciary is in danger of being stacked against us. One of the single biggest concerns right now is that it doesn't matter that Andrew Wheeler is breaking the law. It doesn't matter that Scott Pruitt is breaking the law. They are in the process of attacking our bedrock environmental protections. And it's very likely that under normal circumstances, these attacks could be shut down in the courts. But we're looking at Brett Kavanaugh right now. And that's a very, very sobering perspective.
Nothing is normal anymore, it seems, under normal circumstances.
Absolutely nothing is normal anymore. And if Brett Kavanaugh is allowed to take the vacant Supreme Court seat, he has a notoriously bad record on environmental issues, in addition to women's health protections, LGBTQ protections. A lot of these issues he's terrible on. Environmentalism is only one on the list. But if he is seated on the Supreme Court, it could mean that a lot of policies whose rollback might be stopped by a normal, sane judiciary might be allowed to proceed. That means that the most important thing that we can do right now in order to stop Andrew Wheeler, in order to stop Scott Pruitt's legacy from being fully implemented, is keep Brett Kavanaugh off of the Supreme Court.
I'm glad you brought that up because his name seems to have slipped out of the news lately. One Democratic lawmaker, Joe Manchin, did meet with him. We'll see whether other Democrats stand firm. Now, there was one bright spot at the EPA in recent days, and that was the rolling back of policies that had started to be put into place around allowing super polluting trucks, so-called super polluting trucks. That has now been overturned. Why do you think that happened, and is that a victory?
The glider truck proposal. Yeah, I'm very glad that you brought that up. Mm-hmm. So under the Obama administration, a limit had been placed on the number of super polluting trucks that could be released, that could be sold per year. This was done through the regulatory process. And one of the first things that Scott Pruitt did after he was confirmed was peel back that regulation. Now, that's a long, complicated legal process. What was happening is that on his last day, after his resignation had been announced, is that he put through one final order that didn't reverse that regulation. It just declared that the EPA was no longer going to enforce it. So what Andrew Wheeler peeled back was not, in fact, that regulation. It was that order of non-enforcement.
I see.
And the issue is that he only peeled it back, I would argue, because it had already lost in court so quickly. This isn't Andrew Wheeler trying to do the right thing. This is Andrew Wheeler recognizing the wrong thing isn't immediately legally feasible.
I like the way you put that. So the actions, the campaigns that organizations like yours mounted against Pruitt, one banner was Boot Pruitt, were clearly very successful in essentially forcing Pruitt's resignation. With him being replaced by Andrew Wheeler, will you have something similar? Are you mounting a similar campaign maybe with a different rhyme to get rid of Wheeler and to push him to resign as well?
The movement that got rid of Scott Pruitt and finally got him out of the EPA absolutely needs to take on Andrew Wheeler. We have no choice. This is a dangerous guy, and the longer he's allowed to remain at the EPA, the more damage he's going to be able to do. There is going to be, eventually, a confirmation fight about this guy. If he is nominated by Trump to officially take over as administrator, that is going to be a vote we watch very carefully. Because if, after his record so far, the Senate votes to confirm him, it will be a fundamental betrayal of clean air, of our climate, and of the American people.
I want to just get a little bit more into detail about his ties to the fossil fuel industry. Murray Energy, which is a very controversial coal company that, as you said, has ties to Donald Trump, has been one of Wheeler's top clients. This is a company in a very polluting but dying industry. Is Andrew Wheeler's leadership at the EPA going to attempt to pull back the coal industry from the brink of death and push away so many of these regulations that it could actually revive, or is coal really dead?
I am really glad you brought up Murray Energy. So as you said, this was Andrew Wheeler's most expensive client while he was in the private sector. When people say that he was a coal lobbyist, this is the company that they're talking about. In the months before Andrew Wheeler started working at the EPA, he was working with Bob Murray on what a lot of people consider to be the most radical and dangerous proposal the energy sector has seen in a long time. It was a call to intervene using the Department of Energy's emergency powers to essentially guarantee the profits of failing coal and nuclear plants. It's a proposal that was so extreme, it managed to unite everyone from the renewable energy sector to consumer advocates. Even parts of the fossil fuel industry thought that this was a bridge way too far. But Andrew Wheeler was on the ground floor of that proposal, and there are, in fact, pictures that were leaked out of the Department of Energy that show him sitting next to Bob Murray with Rick Perry in the room pitching this terrible idea. And it's not just a terrible idea because of the climate, because these coal plants are dying and there isn't an economic miracle that's going to bring back the coal industry. It would also be a disaster for consumers. If we were forced to cover the costs of bailing out these coal plants, and consumers were asked to foot that bill, it could be a lot of money. The estimates varied, but on the higher end, we're talking about $34 billion that would have been handed right to everyday people on their meters just trying to keep the lights on. It was such an overreach that it was shut down almost immediately by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. But our understanding is that the Trump administration is currently planning to use emergency defense powers to force the purchase of electricity from these ailing dinosaur coal and nuke plants. Now, Andrew Wheeler says he is avoiding discussion of this because he was a lobbyist on the matter. But at this point, after only a month in office and already calls for his ethics to be investigated, how much can we really take him at his word? This guy is a walking conflict of interest, and there is never going to be a way for him to run the EPA that doesn't come back to his allegiance to the fossil fuel industry.
We're talking about Scott Pruitt, we're talking about Andrew Wheeler, but really what we need to do is talk about Trump, right? This is the person that has brought these sorts of figures in. If Andrew Wheeler is removed or forced to resign, et cetera, from the EPA, it's not like Trump tomorrow is going to turn around and appoint somebody who actually cares about our environment and about public health to the EPA, which is what the EPA needs. He's going to replace them with someone just like Wheeler. So ultimately, this is about the Trump administration and its allegiance to the entire administration's allegiance to fossil fuel, right?
That's absolutely true. The only caveat that I would put in there is that removing Scott Pruitt was incredibly disruptive to the EPA.
Yes.
The stress that he was under during those last few months kept him from moving forward a number of initiatives that would have been disastrous for our environment. It put sand in the gears. And overall, that's what we can do right now. We can slow the process down. We can use movement power. We can use political power. And we can use legal power to try to make everything that they're trying to do happen a little bit more slowly. And the more we're able to run down the clock, the more we're going to be able to survive this administration. That's why we need to take on Andrew Wheeler now, because every ounce of resistance we put up against him and his agenda makes it harder for him to move forward with the EPA. And if he were to move on, if he were to not be confirmed, it would be really hard for the Republicans to just foist someone else in at the last minute. So if you're out there and you think that just because Scott Pruitt is gone, it's okay to move on from the EPA, I just want to say it's more important than ever that you get in and fight and do everything you can to obstruct the identical agenda of acting administrator Andrew Wheeler.
Well, Lucas, give out a website for Friends of the Earth.
FOE.org.
We can't overemphasize the fact that we're in a unique moment of human history. In fact, we have been ever since 1945. Humans demonstrated that their vaunted intelligence had created means to destroy life on Earth. Didn't quite have it yet at that point, but it was obvious that it was going to extend and expand, as it in fact did. A couple of years later, 1947, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists established its famous doomsday clock. How far are we from midnight, terminal disaster? It was set at 7 minutes to midnight. It once reached 2 minutes to midnight, 1953. When the U.S. and then the Soviet Union detonated thermonuclear weapons, which do have the capacity to essentially destroy life, then it's oscillated variously. It's now back at 2 minutes to midnight. With an addition, it was not known in 1945 that we were not only entering the nuclear age, but entering a new geological epoch, what geologists call the Anthropocene. An epoch in which human activity is having severe and deleterious effects on the environment in which human and other life can survive. We also entered into what's now called the sixth extinction, rapid extinction of species, which is comparable to the fifth extinction 65 million years ago when a huge asteroid hit the Earth. World Geological Society finally settled on the end of World War II as the onset of the Anthropocene, sharp escalation and destruction of the environment, not only the global warming, carbon dioxide, other greenhouse gases, but also such things as plastics in the ocean, which are predicted to be greater than the weight of fish in the ocean and not far in the future. So we're destroying the environment for organized human life. We're threatening a terminal disaster with regular nuclear confrontations. Anybody who's looked at the record, which is shocking, would have to conclude that it's a miracle that we survived this long. This generation, for the first time in history, have to ask, will human life survive? And not in the far future. Those are the issues we should be concerned with. Everything else pales in significance in comparison with this. And going back to NATO, well, what is it doing? It expanded to the Russian border. If you take a look at Trump's policies from a geostrategic point of view, they're totally incoherent. I mean, on the one hand, he's making nice to Vladimir Putin. On the other hand, he's escalating the threats against Russia and hence to ourselves as well. Arms to Ukraine, serious threat to Russia, increasing forces at the Russian border. The Russians are doing the same on the other side. Military maneuvers, the new nuclear program which he's instituted, which is a severe threat to Russia and indeed the world. Already under Obama, the modernization programs had reached the level where they were posing a literal first strike threat to Russia. That's important work on that has appeared in the scientific journals, Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. Trump is escalating it. Even more modernization of extremely dangerous forces. Also significantly lowering the threshold for nuclear war. Also new weapons, which are supposedly tactical nuclear weapons, which are, as any nuclear strategist can tell you, are just incentives for escalation to final disaster. These are enormous threats against Russia, ourselves as well, combined with being polite to Putin at a press conference. Geostrategically, this makes no sense. If you're looking for a serious strategy behind this, you're looking in the wrong place. That's not what lies behind it. None of this makes sense from a strategic point of view. None. It's all contradictory and incoherent and so on. That should tell us something. Let's look somewhere else. And it all makes perfect sense on the assumption that he's driven by one overwhelming concern, himself. All of this makes sense for a megalomaniac who wants to make sure that he has power, he has wealth, has to appeal to a number of constituencies to make sure he's supported. One constituency is the overwhelmingly hawkish establishment, expand NATO, build up the military system, modernize nuclear weapons and so on. Okay, he's got them in his pocket. The crucial constituency is, and his actual one, are the corporate sector and the super rich. And he's just lavishing gifts on them while he's prancing in front of the media, and the media are helping him out by focusing on him. His minions in Congress are carrying out sheer robbery. I mean, it's unbelievable if you take a look at it point by point. I mentioned a couple of examples before. Then he has to maintain a voting base, otherwise he's out. He does that by posturing. I'm going to confront NATO, make them pay more so they won't be robbing us anymore. Great. I'm going to confront China, stop stealing our intellectual property. Great. I'm going to put tariffs on everybody. I'm defending you guys, workers' rights. Point by point, it all falls into place. And I think that's pretty much what's going on. Searching for some coherent geostrategic strategy behind this is almost hopeless. There are a few things, of course. The effort to construct an alliance of the most reactionary Middle Eastern states against Iran, Saudi Arabia, Israel, United Arab Emirates, Egypt under the dictatorship. That's crazy, but coherent strategy. I should say that one corollary to the me first doctrine, which has been observed over and over, is that if Obama did something, I've got to do the opposite. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter what the consequences are. Otherwise, I'm not, a transformative president, a significant president.
This is the Berkeley Signal.
Stereo bikes.
The enlightened ones tell you, in never to be forgotten words, that this little span of life is but a passing shadow, a fleeting thing.
If you realize the technology and the powers that keeps a society turned on, so this will ignore the fears of Nelson and the Smothers Brothers.
Then indeed there are treasures for you up above, and there is peace for you now. Peace which passes all understanding, and happiness to which we are utter strangers. The music of life is in danger of being lost in the music of the voice.
The creative process and meets of people whose lives have been forever.
dazzled by the splendor.
Well, I sat on the pie there for a minute.
You dare to be dazzled by the splendor of Christ upon your breast. Do not be thrown off your feet by his passing show.
One, folks.
I think that the fullest of development is impossible. Down to be dazzled.
Thank Pliskin, so man sentiment here. Something's going down. We need him.
Me that time, I wasn't looking for you. I did. No, Alwyn Nikolai is his name, a very gifted choreographer, put it that way. We used to use him on the show when we were on Sunday evenings. And he does his own music. I guess music is the best word they can find for it, and it sounds very much like that. He plays tin cans backwards and records them at strange tape speeds.
Television is so obsessed with keeping up with the present that it's easy to forget that it has a past, too.
Was clearly a year of change.
Is he a wizard?
How is the day do you watch TV?
About one.
One? Why?
Of course I'm. Because it's not much. Okay.
It's not much to look at, huh?
Yeah.
How many hours a day would you say you watch TV?
12.
You watch TV 12 hours a day?
Oh, I like TV.
Weekdays, about three. So this
Saturday, Sunday, 12-14.
12-14 hours on a weekend day?
Yes, that's what I did. Yesterday was 14.
Really? How many hours a day would you say you watch TV?
About 5-6. You know, almost the whole night, really.
Yeah, you like it a lot?
Yeah, it's nothing else to do, just watch TV. You know?
I'm the internet service provider here in Dallas, Texas.
Can you explain what internet is?
It's time, Doc. Imprint.
Sorry, I could not hear you. Please repeat. Sorry, I could not hear you. Did you say? I'm watching you.
Mister, look.
But his Voyager pod is no longer connected to
I'm
the
fine
network.
With me.
I've seen JD's way.
Did David disconnect?
In the closet.
Can you please clarify?
What is that? Did David disconnect?
David Vasquez did not initiate a verbal command to disconnect. But his Voyager pod is no longer connected to the network. Of monitoring his status from our location.
You are a TV, yes.
Okay.
I mean the fact that our show is going to be on CBS this fall.
show.
Pod number 61428, David Vasquez, was recorded at 2138 at 98,620 kilometers.
He was in configuration?
Addict, I think. Right. Have you ever tried withdrawal?
His position and velocity were within normal parameters.
Be on CBS this fall.
And
show.
The other pods?
No. The tails. Oh.
What is it you would like to know?
It's really none of my business, but, you know, I've always kind of thought of you as more of the casual type, don't you?
Is everything normal? Is everyone accounted for? Iris?
Fancy.
I do not have a connection to Voyager Honshu. I do not
See,
have a connection to Voyager Navara. I do not have a connection to Voyager Patel.
What's going on?
I do not have a connection to Voyager Honshu. I do not have a connection to Voyager Navara. I do not have a connection to Voyager Patel.
What's going on?
Old Doc Hoovy, he talked through a hose.
Trim up the tree with Christmas stars, my bingo balls. Trim up the tree with Christmas stars, my bingo balls. Voyager, I do not have a connection to Voyager Honshu. I do not
You're
have a connection
getting married.
To Voyager Navara. I do not have a connection to Voyager Patel.
What's going on?
Please clarify.
Why is the network disconnected? What's happening?
16 minutes to go. Voyager and Take was the only passenger without an active simulated environment. He reported...
There's a shooting star.
Actually, that's the sun.
Anticipated contact with an unknown object.
Жители Земли.
Was that?
Thank you.
And then to this strange conglomeration of sounds.
If you've seen psychiatrists and you are still a mixed-up cat.
If you like Star Wars and Raiders, you'll love Epic Adventure, a musty tale of magic, dungeons and wizards and witches, damsels and desire, and the warrior caught between.
Creates dances, choreography.
Every conflict now comes to the screen. And the armies of darkness that both wanted the world and the richest kingdom on earth. A story of power and majesty, black magic and lust, treachery and justice.
You should go to Africa.
Master of black magic and vengeance, nightmares and dreams. Resurrected. See armies in battle. See the sacrifice of the princess. See you.
Long ago.
But you, the circle.
Perhaps an Aquarius.
And he's really a genius.
There existed a galaxy.
In this particular field.
All these years I've been studying.
I guess we must have to let somebody around the country talk right now.
Dan Proust.
Five. Four.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. The President of the United States.
You're on camera, Mr. President.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, my fellow Americans.
My fellow Americans.
My fellow Americans.
My fellow Americans.
My fellow Americans and our millions of illegal aliens.
This is your president.
It is with a heavy heart.
It is with a heavy heart.
I address you tonight. Not as the President of the United States.
This is the President of the United States calling from planet Earth.
I apologize for interrupting your regular programs, but I have a very important announcement to make.
Recently, this really fine young woman
began with an announcement that may come as a surprise to many of you.
I did on a handful of occasions smoke marijuana.
Very funny.
Could you turn that off?
A few minutes ago, the United States ambassadors to every country in the world told the leaders of those nations what I am about to tell you.
What ought to starve and be?
It's bad medicine. And nobody said the medicine was going to taste any good.
It's nothing of me.
But can we afford not to take it?
The political fate of any man.
Natural resources without consequence. I was wrong.
I'd like to apologize to the American people.
I'm sorry.
I want to be able to govern.
Depends on how long it takes your damn government.
You suppose you could turn the music down just a little?
Turn it back on.
But you just got through saying.
I know, but turn it on.
They're leaving.
We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest.
Never again will I allow our political self-interest to deter us from doing what we know to be morally right.
I'm going to make a responsibility of this government to find a job for every American who wants one.
You cannot address crime prevention without getting rid of assault weapons and handguns.
A woman will serve in the highest level of the executive. Simple as that.
But I'm going to convince Americans that I'm
talking
right,
about
and I'm going to get the
I don't
guns.
Know. I hope. Thank you, everybody.
We will see a day when on this earth,
Kansas place,
all men will walk out of the long tunnels of tyranny.
Find a clothes, son.
Into the bright sunshine of freedom.
We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on.
Life will go on.
Stars. We're going to survive.
We will prevail.
We celebrate our Independence Day.
Stories of time.
Okay.
Mr. God.
God bless you.
May God continue to bless the United States of America.
Good night. And God bless you all.
I present this, Mr. President, hope that our great nations may learn to live
that
in peace.
Sit down. Sit down. Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm with the President of the United States.
Let's be clear, sir.
Excuse me, sit down. You weren't called. Sit down. Sit down. Go ahead. No, you don't.
Millions of freedom loving conservatives are taking up the call.
Go ahead.
Barry Goldwater, United States Senator from Arizona. In these times when the need for a valiant new leader, a 20th century constitutional statesman,
sit down,
has emerged,
please.
That man is wanted.
You weren't
to
called.
Lead, to guide and to make safe the liberties of our people. On bumper stickers, lapel pins, tie bars, billboards, in magazines, newspapers.
Yes, go ahead.
The story you are about to hear is true. Its prologue past is a matter of public eloquent glory, record, and written fact.
And paying to volunteer
is up to you.
This is an important election year, unlike those other election years, which weren't important at all. In fact, they were just totally frivolous. We don't even know why we did it. Because we had to. But that's the only reason. We had no joy at all. There's no joy in the election years other than this one. This one's the important. This one's the important. The one where you have the worst choices is the most important one of all. In other years, when we had really great choices.
Did David disconnect? Is everything normal? Is everyone accounted for?
What is it you would like to know?
Is everything normal? Is everyone accounted for? Iris?
I do not have a connection to Voyager Honshu. I do not have a connection to Voyager Navara. I do not have a connection to Voyager Patel.
What's going on?
Please clarify.
Why is the network disconnected? What's happening?
16 minutes ago, Voyager and Take was the only passenger without an active simulated environment.
Cat videos are so popular on the internet that they have become universal shorthand for the internet itself. Cat videos are so popular on the internet that they have become universal shorthand for the internet itself. Cats are the mascots of being online. They're the epitome of distracting, useless, and comforting.
Ending with us winning, you already know. This time we get it and go.
will be the year that we do what we've been waiting for. This year will be the year that we stop knocking and kick down that door. Loved ones, we don't know why. Hesitation is a drug of choice. This time we on fire. Make your mark on the world, let them hear all your voice. Cause our life on this ball is just a blink of an eye. It ain't no fairy. God, mama, gon' help you and I. Woke up this morning, brushed my teeth and spit out the lie. Decided I'm gon' live if I am gon' have to die. You can take it anywhere you want. 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 You can take it anywhere you want. You can take it anywhere you want. Take it anywhere you want. Just take it. Get them out they body, babe. This time we gon' bust the ceiling. Oh, 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 for sure. We coming with tens of millions. Them villains be oh so shady. It's gonna be ending with us winning, you already know. This time we get it in. We gon' get them out they body, babe. This time we gon' bust the ceiling. Oh, 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 for sure. We coming with tens of millions. Them villains be oh so shady. It's gonna be ending with us winning, you already know.
This is the Berkeley Signal.